Good evening. Once again, it's good to see you, and especially those that are here tonight that weren't here this morning. We're glad you've come our way. And for those that are here all the time, I'm so glad to see you. This evening, I want to talk a moment or a few minutes about the idea of stewardship in the sense that this is going to be an ongoing study for a number of weeks. And that this is, the sense of this is going to be from personal stewardship to begin with. And then we will move eventually into congregational stewardship and some of those things. But for now, we want to begin in Luke, the 12th chapter, and beginning in verse 42. It says, "And the Lord said that who then is the faithful and sensible steward whom his master will put in charge of his servants to give him their rations and at the proper time? Blessed is that slave whom the master finds so doing when he comes. Truly I say to you that he will put him in charge of all of his possessions. But if that slave says in his heart, 'My master will be a long time in coming,' and begins to beat the slaves, both men and women, and to eat and drink and get drunk, and that the master of that slave will come on a day when he does not expect it, and at an hour he does not know, and will cut him in pieces and assign him a place with the unbelievers. And that slave who knew his master's will and did not get ready or act in accord with his will receive many lashes. But the one who did not know it and committed deeds worthy of a flogging will receive but few. And from everyone who has been given much, much will be required. And to whom they entrusted much, of him they will ask all the more." And so this is a very practical passage in my mind. And it speaks to the Christian's obligation before God to handle the things of God. And that has to do with both physical things and in spiritual things. So, it's apparent that the faithful and sensible steward cares for the things of God as if God were there to order it himself. Now, I don't know if you think like that, but that's the idea that we have been left in charge of the things of God, and that now you are left here for the purpose of handling things the way God would handle things. Now, you know, that puts a spin on some stuff that kind of scares my mule. That's not just casual thinking that has to happen here. That is an understanding of what God would be and what he does and how he does it, and that we would be emblematic of that in everything that we do as well. And I am saying that on this moment personally, my personal stewardship. So blessed is the slave who is diligent in his care for others, that thinks of other people and cares for them and sees to their needs. The master will put him in charge of all of his possessions. Those that will take care of those that he would take care of, then he would trust you with more to do more. And what a blessing. The servant who looks at his master's departure as a time to do as he wishes is despised by his master. And so, to what point? To the point of, now, sometimes the Bible gets pretty straight. To the point of cutting. Now, when I start hearing language like that, you know, I don't think of that as, oh, well, that's just a little simple metaphor. I think of that as being that serious business, and that scares me. It scares me. Okay, that he would assign him to the unbelievers as if they were strangers and if they were robbers, and that you had nothing to do with me, and you, by your own actions, you have done nothing that would say that I would call you mine by the manner in which you've been acting and by the care that you've given to my stuff. Ooh. So that the steward will not get ready for the master's return. Who would use, and I think of this, now who is that are we talking about? Those that would make some sort of ignorance is an excuse. I didn't know I was supposed to do that or that I was supposed to go that far. You could hear the whine. To him, he will be beaten with many lashes. There's no excuse for that ignorance. The lesser stewards, who did not know as much as the head steward, then will receive lesser lashes because their offense was less. Their responsibility was less. And so that one may shirk small deeds and only get a few lashes, but the one who shirks the deeper and heavier responsibilities will receive many lashes. Now, if I take just kind of a sideline here for a second, when Jesus talks to the Pharisees, he talks to them and saying, you know, you brood of vipers, you hypocrites. What are they? Why? Why are they that? Because you took the heavier matters of the law and you ignored them while you're over here I-dotting and T-crossing. What this says is that they're despised by God. And so that we need to recognize, even in small things, how we handle the small things is going to be a basis for how we handle larger things. The passage shows that stewardship is not a combination of duties, but an attitude of integrity. This is not about what are the duties so much as it is about what kind of integrity do you have toward your master. And so, once again, when we begin offering excuses for why we can't or don't do what God says do, do you understand that God's not buying it? So the definition of a steward, I gave you a complete definition on your, if you have an outline, but basically it's a manager or a superintendent of another's household. That means you're going to take care of all of their stuff. Then the steward is the one who looks after those things which belong to someone else, and that when that person believes on Christ, repents of his sins, and is baptized upon the confession of his faith, he becomes a steward of God, of the things of God, the message of God, the important things, of the attitudes of God. Again, when I think about that every person in the church is a steward of some sort and of on some level. And when I think about that as well, I realize that that is both physical and spiritual things. And that as that steward, that as I'm involved with that, that shall I call it a job? I mean, I'm searching for words up here. Shall I call it a job of which I'm responsible for the things that are going to go on in the job that I have? And now then you would ask the question, to what degree? And to the degree that in certain cases you run the place, meaning, okay, and so that I run my household as the head of the house, I have responsibility with God's law and what he would have me be and do with my family, with those that might visit within my household and those things. And you can see that becomes very, very important. That every instance in the Bible where the word steward is used, it shows that the person had to give an account to the owner. And so we wouldn't act as if this is my stuff. We would act as if it's not. That I have it on loan. or that I'm in charge of it while the master is away. 1 Corinthians, the 4th chapter, beginning in verse 1, says, let a man regard us in this manner as servants of Christ, stewards of the mysteries of God. In this case, moreover, it is required of stewards that one be found trustworthy. And so that the basis of being a steward is trust. And so, as we are sought to trust God with the things that make us fearful, he trusts us to handle ourselves properly according to his precepts. So our lesson is learned simply by defining stewardship of what responsibility is going to be. And each of us is going to be the steward of the good things of God. And that it was a common thing in the Bible. So that it was customary for kings to have stewards, and every well-ordered household had a steward to manage the master's money and property. that one basic essential and fundamental truth was that every Christian must learn is that a faithful steward does not own those things in his possession, and it is not wrong for a man to possess wealth, but it is wrong for wealth to possess the man. Now, in a country where wealth is exalted like it is here, how would you act? I mean, this is as good a question as I can ask. What would be the attitude of heart there? And so, if I go to Malachi, the third chapter, beginning in verse 8, it says this: "Will a man rob God? Yet you were robbing me. But you say, 'How have we robbed you?' In tithes and offerings. You are cursed with a curse, for you are robbing me. The whole nation of you is doing that. Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse so that there may be food in my house. And test me now in this, says the Lord of hosts. If I will not open for you the windows of heaven and pour out for you a blessing until it overflows, if you will bring me what is mine." So, tithing is one aspect of the giving to God in a physical way is being talked about here in the physical tithe, but it is the attitude of heart that's really under consideration here. So that the question, will a man rob God? Now, I don't think I would have to ask much more than a child. If you were going to steal, would you like to steal from God? And if they have any concept of who God is, of the last person I would want to steal from is God. No, I do not want to steal from God. Okay, and so it becomes then this review of my heart. What would I take from my God, and what would I take, and why would I do that? Now, I'm going to make this point, and again, it's something of a sideline we'll actually discuss later. I know those that don't contribute into the congregation's money or withhold pieces because I don't necessarily agree with how money's being spent. And so I'm not going to do that. And I'm going to save some back to do some other things or whatever's going to be along those lines. And I'm going to ask you, is that what God intended? That we work together and toward the same end. And if we have some goals that need challenging, then we would need to challenge those things. Please, I'm not making that statement. But I am making the statement, when we start doing the directing instead of the manner in which God said, yeah, I think you better be careful with what you're doing. All right. So as we go on with this, and we begin to ask it, so no one could be so mad as to attempt to rob God. You wouldn't do that. And the people were shocked to even hear that God accused them of that. What do you mean? We make our tithes every week. In what way have we robbed you? Because you brought me the blind and the lame. Bring me your first fruits. And they brought blind animals. Oh yeah, that's the best I've got. Really? You've robbed me in tithes and offerings. You didn't give me what I'm asking for, because what I was asking for was your respect to the point where you gave me the best of what you have. And you brought me something, but your something is nothing, and I throw it aside because I don't want your offerings under those terms. That's what he says. So, some of the basic truths that we have about stewards, you see, is then that a steward doesn't own anything. And a good steward seeks the praise of his master. A faithful steward knows that he must give an account. And a good steward wants his master, again, his approval. And that a good steward wants to hear the words, "Well done, my good and faithful servant." Because that's what we really want to hear one day. So, do we offer God our appreciation and what he has given us? And I'm asking you that not about money, but about money. I'm asking you the question, do we appreciate what God has given us. And then I want to make this statement, that appreciation is the basis for worship. Hold that thought for just a second. Isn't that why we would give our money, is because of appreciation for what's been given to us? Isn't it by the gift of Jesus, his son, that we might live, that we would bow our knee, pray to him, seek his will, seek his manner, seek his attitudes, seek the things that he cares for? Is that not the reason and the basis for all of it? Is our appreciation for what's been done? And so to rob God is an automatic statement that I don't appreciate what's been done. Our worship is the adoration of our hearts toward God for the bountiful ways he has blessed us. He is the one that provides our sustenance, and he is the one that gives us our physical comforts. He is the one that gives us all of our relationships. He is the one that gives us hope. He is the one that gives us salvation. And if you knew that today was the last day on earth, your last day, what would you give to be sure that God takes you home with him? And I suggest everything you have, because I won't need it tomorrow. And now then, with that question, what do I owe? What do I owe? What do I owe God? And 2 Corinthians, beginning in chapter 9 and beginning in verse 6, is a passage that we recognize and read regularly. Now, I say this, that he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and that he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Each one must do just as he has purposed in his heart, not grudgingly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound to you. Just hold that. So that always having all sufficiency in everything, you may have an abundance for every good deed. As it is written, he scattered abroad and gave to the poor. His righteousness endures forever. So what is it that God has given? And why are you prospered? And as we come to that, the language is similar to Malachi 3, where Paul offers that God is the one making all grace abound to you. The things that you benefit from, your personalities and the relationships that you share, and for the closeness that you have and the love that is on this earth, all those things come from God. That the things that you have in a physical way, all that comes from God. And so consequently, he is the one that gives to you. Why would you rob me? And we say, how would I rob you? I don't want to rob you. And so when I talk about money, is how much do we give? And are you satisfied with what you give? Have you thought about it? Are you given what you should give and feel that you should give? But what I'm more interested in is, so would I give my presence here? Would I come and remember my God every time that I can and should? Is my appreciation of the nature that I don't let anything interfere with that? Would that be a way to rob God, you see? Is that I won't give you the attention you deserve because I let something get in the way? Or is there some good reason why I misunderstand? Is there some reason why I would hold back an attitude, a loving care attitude toward people, why I wouldn't share with my own brethren who I am and what I do and the kinds of things that I do that way? Would I do that? Or should I be involved? And I suggest to you that we can rob God by the things that we do, by the attitudes that we hold, and by things that have nothing to do with money. And when God says that he wants your heart, he's talking about your heart in such a way that I am willing to give all of me to your cause. So am I willing to be uncomfortable for God? Am I willing to be in a situation that I don't really, I don't feel real good about being here right now? I don't want to talk to someone that's gone astray. I don't want to be that guy. I'm afraid I might make a mistake. And you see that as we come into those kinds of things and begin to see it, that the ones that receive food when they are hungry are rewarded by the meal. And so we recognize they are thankful for the meal and that they should give thanks to God for the meal, even though it may have been my hand that provided it. For you, it is the understanding of what God does for you every day and that you are offering what God does for you to someone else. Now, would that be a kind word? Could I say a kind word to somebody who's down and do them a tremendous favor in doing so? I think I could. We declare Him by the things that we do. And this is the part of taking care of the household, and we're not just taking care of the kitchen. We're not just taking care of the grounds. We're not just taking care of the rooms of the house and make sure there's no dust there. No, that's not what we're doing. We're taking care of the household, the family. We're taking care of everybody that has need. And when somebody's sick, we're going to help take care of them. We're going to see to it that they get what they need. With somebody who's got an attitude problem, we're going to try to go help them with those kinds of things. That's what it means to be a good steward. And so, we please Him by our desire to help someone else. Now, I don't mean to make this sound like I'm beating you up. I don't want to beat us up. I want us to understand what the rat race is doing to us. The rat race gets you so involved with what you have to do that you don't have time for somebody else. I can't get there. I don't have the time. I've got this on my mind and that on my mind, and I got this to do and that to do, and the kids got this to do and that to do, and that we overcommit, and then there's no time for God, and Satan wins. And so we must be careful of that. God intends for His children to keep the things that He holds dear and then to sacrifice ourselves for His sake. That is to say that if something's going to give, it's not going to be God. It's going to be somewhere else. We're going to let it go there. And there's no greater proof of what I'm saying than Jesus being on the cross. What did God give up for our sake? That we might appreciate it for His sake. And so that's the point. Jesus offers Himself. He's not forced. I think that that's probably what makes Him the great sacrifice, other than the fact that He's sinless, is that I'm willing. And as He does that, you see the Father is well pleased because you care about those that I care about. You care about the things that I care about. And you gave yourself up. And again, I still think that the great sacrifice is coming down from heaven, not the cross itself, and yet the cross itself means so very much to us. He blends both realms together in such a way that God is pleased and we are pleased. And so, wow, it just doesn't get any better than that. And that is the understanding that we come to. That's the situation that we come to. Is to understand what God has done. So there's a lot of stuff that falls under the subject of stewardship. They're both physical and they're spiritual. They're important whether they fall into the physical realm or the spiritual realm, but it is our hearts that show and reflect the light of God. And so I think I connected that a little bit, or was attempting to this morning, with does my hope shine? Because you see, it is my hope that drives much of what I do. Then our generosity may take the form of giving money or forgiveness. What's the price of forgiveness, by the way? See, I'm not giving anything up that's physical. But it may be the hardest thing that I ever do because I give up my heart. That's exactly right. And so as we enter into these discussions of stewardship, you see, I hope that you'll open yourself to God's instruction by example. Now, this is what I generally find, that people love to see a good example. And you know, that Edward does so good. You know what he just did the other day? And we can say something along those lines. What a wonderful example that is. But you see, by that example, I am instructed that that's something that I should emulate. And what I see is that we've become people that we don't see the responsibility of recognizing what a good example is. It is meant for you to do. Teach faithful men who are able to teach others also means that when you see a good example of something that someone did, that you do that same thing for someone else, and then you teach it to someone else to do it as well. And that doesn't mean I come to your house and say, you know what you need to do? That's not what it's talking about. It means that we're supposed to be astute enough to recognize our responsibilities in this life. And once again, the rat race steals that from us. And so when I go and I say so that it, you know, that our generosity may take the form of giving money, or it may be the form of giving forgiveness, which would be more valuable to you? And I tell you, there are times when forgiveness means far more than what money does. I have an old adage that I try to remember on a regular basis. I find that nothing costs me what I think it's going to cost. It's always more. That is a cynical point of view, and I recognize it, and so go ahead, y'all can laugh at me, but that's what I find, is that every time I think it's going to cost me this, it costs me more than that. And if it only cost me money, I've done good. Because what's it going to cost me if it's other than money? Again, as we enter into discussions on stewardship, then we are looking at what God has given us as examples, and that God's giving is extraordinary in giving. It's abundant, and it's abundant in the amount of each gift and then the number of gifts that have been given to us. Are you a bountiful giver or a reluctant one? Do you give, you know, all the time and wanting to, and I can't give enough away? I can't give myself enough. I want to share. Okay, knowing that who we are offers an entire field of growth many, many times. What does a good example do? And we'll just say, for your children. All right. I'm fessing up. Before, even after I got married, I must have thought that race car drivers were the peak of manhood, because I like to go fast as you can go, and speed limits didn't mean a great deal to me. And so how fast, you know, that need for speed thing was in my blood. And I would get to where I could go as fast as I could get there, and all the screaming that was going on in the car didn't bother me at all. So I'll just let you know. Okay, and so I'm sure that many of you have examples, but there are times I was on the way to Orlando one time, and a little Datsun 240Z goes by me, and I'm driving a Mustang, High Performance 351, and the guy that owns it sitting beside me says, "You're going to let him do that?" I said, "As a matter of fact, no." And so I pass him, he passes me, we get up to where his car won't go any faster. Okay, the Mustang would only do 150. And the Datsun pulled away from us like we weren't even there. I said, "He wins," and slowed down. And you say, "Are you nuts?" I was then. When I got married, it didn't change much because Renee said it. While I drive as I drive. And when I had children, and this is before car seats, and I throw them into the floor with my braking from the speeds I'm doing, all of a sudden I recognize I can't be that way anymore. My parents didn't teach me to drive fast. Okay? My own choice. I want us to recognize. And so consider what generous giving would be in God's eyes. Not for you. He doesn't expect you to be Him. But what would be generous for Him is the question. And compare it to what you actually give now. And if you need to do something about your attitude, then do it. How much of it is about money? How much of it is about far more than that? And I ask and pray that God will grant us the ability to see ourselves clearly and that we might seek to be as He is. Those that are always willing to give, recognizing need wherever we go, whether that be a monetary need or whether that be a spiritual need. Let's share with one another who we are. Be what we should be before God and before men. That good examples are going to be given by me, by my own choice, and that our attitude would be what it should be. If you're not a Christian, we always invite you that all things are ready to become one if that is necessary. And we also invite anyone that has a problem that we could help with, whether that's praying for you or helping you in some other way. Let your wishes be known as we stand and sing.